Picture scrolling through your phone at 2 a.m., bathed in blue light, toggling between apps where different versions of yourself exist simultaneously. The witty Twitter persona, the aesthetically curated Instagram profile, the professional LinkedIn identity. Which one is real? The uncomfortable truth is that they all are, and none of them are. We've entered an era where identity itself has become a performance we can never stop giving, on a stage where the curtain never falls and the audience never leaves. The internet once felt like liberation. In 1999, a 10-year-old could build her own corner of cyberspace on GeoCities, learning HTML just for the joy of creation. Back then, the digital world resembled a village of curiosities. You wandered through web rings of animal GIFs, stumbled into forums organized by genuine interest, discovered things privately. Pleasure existed as its own reward. But something fundamental shifted around 2012. The village became a sprawling, unlivable city. What began as self-expression curdled into self-surveillance. We're now trapped in a system where our identities are simultaneously the product being sold and the currency we use to buy connection. The architecture of social media positions your personal identity as the center of the universe, binoculars that make everything look like your own reflection. Today's ideal woman appears effortlessly perfect. Glossy hair, ageless skin, camera ready always. Modern optimization culture's genius lies in transforming external demands into personal aspirations. You're not conforming to beauty standards, you're investing in yourself. You're not succumbing to capitalism, you're maximizing your potential. Walk into a bar class and witness this ideology made flesh. The cave dark room fills with sinewy women staring stone-faced at mirrored reflections, thrusting their bodies to deafening musicless exercise, then training for 12-hour workdays. It's the perfect workout for an era where everyone works constantly, but women must still look unreasonably good. No shower needed, back to the office in 10 minutes. Then you grab lunch at Sweetgreen, inhaling a $12 salad to maintain the job that affords such salads, generating data and revenue through your loyalty app. The circularity is dizzying. How much of what we claim to enjoy is genuine preference versus internalized mandate? When you're a woman, the things you like get weaponized against you, or the things used against you are carefully packaged as things you should like. Map female life through literature, and a troubling arc emerges. Childhood heroines burst with possibility, teenage protagonists drown in desire, and adult women face poison, trains, and drowning. Anne Shirley delivers breathless monologues about her dreams. Harriet the Spy declares mountains into existence through sheer will. But adolescent Esther Greenwood sees her futures branching like figs on a tree, each possibility rotting before she can choose. Adult Emma Bovary discovers that marriage offers only instantaneous turning to decay. The stark difference reveals something devastating. Girls are allowed to be themselves, but women must become what others need them to be. The tragedy isn't that these women failed to achieve their dreams, it's that achieving the prescribed dream turns out to be its own form of death. Houston's 42-acre megachurch, the Repentagon, was a self-contained universe where faith provided clear boundaries and exciting narratives. Christianity felt natural, occasionally transcendent, until fifth grade when rigidity intensified, banning Disney, confiscating secular music, attributing tragedies to God's will. Then came Houston's hip-hop radio during a Sunday service escape, playing chopped and screwed music that matched the city's sprawling landscape. Life existed beyond church walls, prayers at cheerleading camp followed by bedroom rap sessions, youth group worship alternating with foam-soaked teen club nights. Religion and drugs attracted for similar reasons. Both offer transcendence, a way to stand outside yourself. MDMA generates empathy by removing inhibitions, fostering emotional connection. One researcher called it penicillin for the soul. Whether through prayer or pharmaceuticals, the human hunger for rapture remains constant. We seek moments when the boundaries of self dissolve. Billy McFarland started scamming at 22, charging young professionals $250 annually for Magnuses, a club offering VIP event access and a black card that merely duplicated an existing credit card's magnetic strip. Members quickly discovered their expensive tickets mysteriously invalid, but by then, McFarland had moved on. He's less an aberration than a perfect emblem of our era. The 2008 financial crisis revealed scamming as America's defining ethos. Banks built a housing bubble on predatory lending, then received government bailouts when it collapsed. Unlike Iceland, which jailed 29 bank executives, American bankers emerged richer. College tuition tripled while wages stagnated. Facebook turned users into products, selling our attention to advertisers. Amazon dismantled social structures to extract maximum profit, subjecting warehouse workers to constant monitoring. Donald Trump, an open con artist, was elected president, the transparent lie becoming central to his appeal. We're living in an economy where the scam isn't the exception, but the operating system itself. Charlottesville markets itself as an idyllic college town, but beneath UVA's white-columned facade lie troubling contradictions. Between 1998 and 2014, the university expelled 183 students for honor code violations while treating sexual assault with minimal consequences, a disparity Rolling Stone's retracted A Rape on Campus exposed. Founded by Thomas Jefferson in 1819, UVA was built by enslaved laborers. Jefferson owned Sally Hemings, who was 14 when she accompanied his daughter to Paris. Though she could have remained free in France, Jefferson persuaded her to return by promising eventual freedom for her children, all while publicly writing about black people's supposed inferiority. College towns exist in perpetual amnesia, their populations turning over every 4 years. At UVA, this has enabled persistent denial that slave labor built its campus, that it has a long history of sexual violence, that Alderman Library was named for a eugenicist. The school's idealized self-conception can never become true until it acknowledges how false it has always been. Over the past decade, understanding our lives through a feminist lens became normalized. What was once dismissed as crazy is now recognized as sexist labeling. We've learned to reframe celebrity narratives. Britney Spears crushed by impossible demands, Monica Lewinsky exploited by the most powerful boss in America. This reframing is powerful, yet slippery. When a woman's worth is built partly on the unfairness she faces, three facts collapse. Everyone faces criticism, extraordinary women face more, and all criticism exists within sexism's context. This creates the dangerous idea that harsh criticism of any woman is always sexist, and that receiving it indicates worth. Meanwhile, the wedding industry exemplifies how patriarchal structures disguise themselves as empowerment. Couples spend an average of $30,000 on 12 hours, marketed as both fun and tradition. Yet marriage historically disadvantaged women, from ancient laws permitting violence to American women needing husbands' permission for credit cards until 1974. We're living in a hall of mirrors, each reflection distorting reality. The first step toward clarity isn't smashing the mirrors, it's recognizing them as mirrors. Stop performing for invisible audiences. Question which desires are genuinely yours versus carefully implanted mandates. The revolution isn't about becoming a better version of the self these structures demand. It's about stepping outside the trick mirror entirely and discovering what remains when you stop trying to see yourself through others' eyes.